the tariffs. Oh, I can't believe we're doing tariffs. Why would we do tariffs? If you're going to put a 25, 30, 40% tariff on our goods coming in, we're going to do the same to you. It's not, hey, we're just going to tax you for the heck of it. If you want access to our markets and our consumer base, you have to allow ours. Let's make it even.
Just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on five key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
It's The Retirement Trainer with Ed Sedell, a podcast about finding ways to help you become financially fit for your future, no matter what financial shape you're in now. What's causing the market uncertainty? Is it tariffs, inflation, the economy, interest rates, or earnings? Or is it all the above or none of the above? What can we expect for 2025? This is Leanne Sedell, and here to help us with all our questions and to give us some guidance to stay in the best financial shape possible, The Retirement Trainer, Ed Sedell. Hi, Ed.
Hey, Leanne. How are you?
I am good. It has been a long time since I have done more than just a simple opening. So,
It has. It has. We kind of got a little bit out of practice there, but we're back into it. And it's important right now with everything that's going on. There's a lot of up and downs, uncertainty, and a whole lot of things. The market hates uncertainty.
Well, so do people.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, when the market is uncertain and extremely volatile, that transcends to people in their everyday life, right? Because there's a huge disconnect. I've been saying this forever, right? There's a huge disconnect between Main Street and in Wall Street. And, you know, the debt is an issue, interest rates, inflation, all these things. I think there was a level of unrealistic expectations. We saw the bliss and jubilee after the election. The market took off. Bitcoin took off. Retail sales exceeded all expectations. Mm-hmm. And then 2025 hit. And then all of a sudden, things kind of came back into reason. Retail sales were down. And here's the irony. People were shocked. I'm like, really? How can you be surprised that retail sales are down? I mean, we were expecting them to be down. I mean, it's a number one, it's a holiday hangover.
I was gonna say.
And people spent way more, right, in celebration of a changing of the guard in the administration. They're like, oh, we have hope. The economy is going to be righted. But number one, it can't be overnight. And when we saw the inflation numbers come out last month, and they were a little bit so this is March. So let's just say January. And everyone's like, oh, my gosh, you know, it's the new administration. Look, they're not even doing what they're saying. Those are lagging numbers. This is leftover from the previous 3 years. And even as we're changing these things, we have to go through some short term pain. We just have to.
Well, no matter what. For people to look at the debt, the size that it is.
The debt bubble. How many years have I been preaching about this?
Well, that is true. And shockingly enough, every time we expect that it's going to be reflected in the market, that all the spending and the debt that we've gone into over the last decade, we haven't felt the pain of any of that. That's what I wanted to say.
We continue to kick the can down the road. When we talk about GDP, so that's the growth of the economy, the growth of our country. When you have a third of the growth of the economy coming from government spending, there's a problem. It hit an all-time high in 2020 through COVID going into 2021, and then followed very, you know, closely by 2021, where it was, you know, 45% of the GDP. And that's what caused inflation. That's really what it was. And so, you know, when you're looking at these numbers, we're still feeling the effects of the printing press. And so the debt that we're talking about, it's not just government debt, it's Americans, you know, everyday people. You know, we're still spending, I think the number is, well, I don't know exactly what, we'll just say 50%, close to half or a little over half of Americans at the end of every month still don't have enough money to cover their bills. So they're putting it on credit cards. Credit card rates now are, you know, approaching 30%. And it's bubble after bubble after bubble.
And I think we've got some of the, I mean, again, I just heard on the news this morning, I think they said that it's $5 for a dozen eggs. And again, we've got to look at a couple of things when that, because the bird flu wiped out our entire population of.
And they're talking about another 41% increase in eggs, you know, this year for 2025. Again, the disconnect, right? The tale of two cities, the Main Street versus Wall Street. And the everyday American, the hardworking middle class America, blue collar, they're now the working poor. They really are. So, I don't want to be gloom and doom by any stretch because there's two sides to the same coin, right? So let's just kind of talk about some of the economic numbers and what we're seeing and what we've been kind of talking about for a while. So this year, the inflation number, it was high. And people were really kind of, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. He caused this inflation. Well, remember, it's lagging. So this is a holdover from 2024. And the policy is going back to 2021. The PCE number came out last week, and it was right at expectations, you know, 2.4%. That's what was expected. And so the market reacted accordingly. It didn't really move a whole lot up or down. But the reality is that it's still above the target, which is 2%. And if you remember when I was talking to the Hart Laffer, trickle-down economics, the economist for the Reagan administration, you know, he was saying that it's arbitrary. Steve Forbes said the same thing. And it really is. If you go back, New Zealand started it. So that 2% is arbitrary. It really doesn't mean anything. But when they say inflation is down, it's not a deflation. It's actually a slower rate of inflation. It's not increasing at the rate that it originally was. I think the big barometer that we saw was Walmart. Their consumer sentiment, you know, they came out with guidance saying that they're expecting lower profits and lower revenues this year. It has more to do with the first 100 days, tariffs, you know, what that means, Doge, energy, you know, all deregulation, all of these things. And people are confused. And I think they're a little worried because they don't understand. And even those of us who do understand, there's still a lot of uncertainty because we have to see how it plays out. But no matter what, we either have to accept short-term pain, okay, now in order to have long-term gain, you know, not to rhyme it, but you're right. Or we can enjoy it now and continue to kick the can down the road until the point where
I think we just want to control also some of the pain so that it is not a drastic where they pull the rug out from everyone. That we don't want to see happen. But, you know, we have been talking about job numbers. I'm not even going to go near government job numbers, but the revisions that were made for last year.
Again, so remember last year in March, they were revised down. They were overestimated by well over 800,000. And for 2024, they were way overestimated by over 500,000.
Yeah.
Right. So it's math. Math is pure. It never lies. It always tells the truth. Okay. But that's not math. These are statistics, right? And the rule is there are lies, there are damn lies, and there are statistics. So they have been fudging the numbers. And it's not just the Biden administration. Every administration does it. Okay. There's not an innocent.
Was it some of this government spending that was being built in to the job numbers? Because a lot of these things, as we're seeing them flash up, it was for upcoming projects. Were they anticipating these jobs being filled?
You know, Leanne, that's a great question. And I don't know the answer to that, but that's a very good possibility. There are anticipatory jobs that never came to fruition.
They were going to be public jobs. They were not going to be private jobs.
Right. But still, you can't claim those until they're actually real. So it's, you know, shovel ready jobs. Remember that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A couple of administrations ago, shovel ready. We have, you know, a million shovel ready jobs that never came to fruition. You know, I think one of the biggest things that, you know, you and I talk about all the time, but, you know, is our friends and clients, the tariffs. Oh, I can't believe we're doing tariffs. Why would we do tariffs? And I think there's a lot of confusion. So let's talk about what a tariff is. A tariff is a tax. And that was the only tax. We never had an individual income tax or after World War I. So why is that important? And why, you know, tariffs? Here, the current administration under Trump saying that he wants to do with an individual income tax and no taxes on Social Security and
no taxes on tips.
No taxes on tips. So there's things that continue to float out there over and over again. And if you've never read the book, The Art of the Deal.
I knew you were going to go there.
Well, you know what? I read it because I wanted to understand how he thinks, right?
Tactics.
Tactics. And so I read it again. And so, you know, that's the whole thing, taxes versus tactics. These aren't threats. So when he was talking about levying tariffs on Mexico and Colombia and Brazil and Canada and the EU, you know, all the way across the board, everyone kept saying they're threats. And I was like, no, they're not threats because threats don't work. The reason that they're working is because they're promises. And the whole purpose was, it's all about reciprocity. What people don't understand is that after World War II, especially, let's go back to the auto workers. They had 100% tariffs on our vehicles for 40 plus years. They were never removed. And that's why when you go over to Germany, you don't see Ford and GM and Chevy. You just don't see them because people can't afford them. And the reciprocity, what I'm talking about is, hey, if you're going to put a 25, 30, 40% tariff or tax on our goods coming in, we're going to do the same to you.
Yeah.
Right. It's not, hey, we're just going to tax you for the heck of it. It's if you want access to our markets and our consumer base, you know, you have to allow ours. Let's make it even. Okay. It's really not even fair trade because let's go to Germany. Germany is probably the best example. So they had with the U.S. a trade surplus. It's a little bit over. So I'm going to say roughly about 250 billion, whatever it was. I think it was a little more than that against the U.S. So we had a trade deficit. So we were upside down. Again, this is because of tariffs and trade. And, you know, we also have a $300 billion trade deficit against China. That's over $500 billion in a trade deficit per year with just two countries. This is why tariffs are so important, because it really does affect our economy. Now, in the short term, does it have a negative impact on our economy? Absolutely it does, because it's going to raise costs. But what it's also going to do, we're already starting to see companies coming in. Look at Apple. They're
going to move here. More and more of them are moving into the United States.
Several $100 billion investment. There's another company that went from $200 to $400 billion investment. So it's going to create opportunities because, and again, this isn't going to be an overnight thing. People are looking at it saying, when I say people, countries and companies saying, you know what? It's not worth fighting that. Let's just build, you know, our factories in the U.S. And that's the other thing, too. Since Nixon, and again, this isn't a Republican or Democrat. This is just a political thing. We have, from administration to administration to administration, Republican, Democrat, we have continued to export our manufacturing overseas. And we saw the big issue that was negative problem during COVID, right? Not just with masks, but with medicines. So we have to, from a national defense standpoint, kind of bring that back on, and not to politicize that, but it really is, it's going to have a positive economic effect because, you know, most of our prescriptions used to be manufactured in Puerto Rico. Did you know that?
I did not.
And so, again, these were all exported overseas. NAFTA, under Clinton, supported by the Republican House and Senate, we shipped everything down to Mexico. So having these tariffs and bringing manufacturing back is going to do nothing but benefit the country long term, because we have to.
And raise standards, I believe. I mean,
all the way across the board. But in order to do that, things are going to be painful, but no one's willing to make any kind of sacrifice, right? It goes back to that, I'm not going to get this right. So what is it? Hard men make soft times make soft men make hard times. Hard times make hard men. And so we got a lot of softies right now. And so people aren't willing to, but it's changing, right? We've seen that pendulum swing.
But we're looking at a major divide you've got in between the working man, and there is such a spread there. So who's carrying the majority of this pain is kind of what the conversation is right now.
Main Street. And that's the rub. So when, you know, we're talking about the agenda. So let's talk about the 100 days. I hate that we're talking about politics, but it's all economics. This is just pure economics. It really is, because the agenda, it's not going to be overnight. Now, we were saying this coming into this year that we're expecting a correction of 11 to as much as 15%. And it's everything is contingent upon the first 100 days. So why is the first 100 days so important? That's because that's when the congressional session ends. Okay. So we're looking at, you know, really the beginning of May. So what is that going to look like? And unless they extend it. So the one big beautiful bill, you know, whatever you want to call it. So what actually is in there? Is it going to pass? Because that's the first thing. So the tax cuts have to be extended. It's not making billionaires rich. It is everyday Americans, because we're looking at the standard deduction being cut by more than half. So that means everyone's going to have to itemize.
Yep.
Right? That's number one. And those that don't have anything to itemize, their taxes are going up. Not to mention the brackets, the income in those brackets, because it goes back to the 2017 levels. And so everyone all the way across the board, taxes are going to go up all the way across the board.
We call it the sunset of 2026, and it always is a hit.
Yep, it is, right? And so when we're building financial plans, I mean, we're looking at it, and we do it both ways, right? So unfortunately, we have to go with what we know. So when we're building these plans, we're still showing the sunset, and it's a big difference. Those getting ready to retire, at retirement or in retirement, we're talking that Monte Carlo simulation, probabilities of success, right? 1,000 different scenarios, and actually raises the probability of success significantly. So then they're never going to make it permanent. And even if they were, I say it all the time, the tax code's written in pencil, it's going to change. And even though this current tax code has been active since 2018, there have been changes. The SECURE Act, 1, 1.5, 2.0.
Are we up to 3?
I don't even know. I don't have enough fingers to count them all, right? So these are the things. So, you know, and part of that is deregulation. All right, we'll get into those here in a minute, but deregulation is going to be really important. Why is deregulation important? So on the DOGE website, and I looked it up, and this is true, for every law that Congress passes, all right, the fourth branch of government, which is the bureaucracy, passes 18 and a half rules and regulations that cost companies money. Think about that. All right, an unelected body of government, right? And this is a big deal, because when you think it's close to 90% of all Americans that are employed, it's by Small Business America. And that's who's getting affected by this.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other thing, the tax cuts, if this tax cut does sunset, that provision for small businesses where they get a reduction, right? So they get another tax break. Most companies, our clients that are business owners, they're not pocketing the money. What are they doing? They're expanding their business. But right now, everyone's like, let's wait.
The uncertainty.
They're like, yeah, we're not going to grow. We're not going to expand. Let's just kind of wait and see what's happening.
Hiring freeze. They're not doing anything.
That's right. Yeah. So this is how, you know, what goes on in D.C. really affects the economy. So let's talk about DOGE. Why is DOGE important? Accountability. You know, when I teach all my classes, whether it's whatever class it is, tax, the econ class, it doesn't matter. I always show that one example, that slide from 2023. If you were $17,000 as a household in debt upside down every year, how many years could you be upside down before you had to declare bankruptcy? And then I show in 2023, we were upside down $1.7 trillion. All right. Well, we've been upside down for decades. And when George W. Bush, GB2, in 2000 was elected, the national debt was $5.8 trillion. Right. It is just shy of $37 trillion. And this is, what is today, March 3rd? March 3rd, 2025. Okay. So in 25 years, it's excessive. So the $10,000 toilet seat, the $40,000 hammer. So this government waste, and they have forgotten that this is our money. It's not their money. So there has to be accountability when we're not passing audits and budgets and everything else. And look, this is an American thing. I like spending my money, and I'm a better steward of my money than anyone else. So I get upset when I have to stroke a check throughout the year to Uncle Sam, and then all of a sudden I'm seeing these reports that they're just throwing it away on things that it's just horrible. So this government waste. So how much actually are we going to be able to save? I don't know, but I've heard people say, well, you know, it's only $50 billion. Only $50 billion? All right. How long is it going to take you to earn that in a year? You know, or in a lifetime?
Again, we're talking about accountability. Regardless of whatever, they need to start having the same methods that small business has in place, that we have to go through exams every year. They should have to be held accountable to what they're spending it on, and they should have to balance their books just like everybody else does. It shouldn't be one of these like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll just worry about it down the road.
This is fiscal responsibility, and it shouldn't matter what side of the aisle that you're on. If we're seeing waste and fraud, people need to be held accountable for it, because this is all of our money. And if you're not looking at it that way, I don't even know what to say, honestly.
Well, and as I heard somebody say the other day, waste and fraud, one is you're made aware that there is a waste problem and you don't do anything about it. And then what happens? Then it becomes fraud that you don't do anything about it. So again, I just think right now we're all... Nobody is having good conversation about Doge because they think that this is a one size versus the other. And all I'm saying is I want somebody held accountable for the way they're spending money, period.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so let's talk about a couple bright spots. So the biggest bright spot that I see is if interest rates hold steady and inflation holds steady, that first of all, if rates go up, we're in trouble because we have a third of the debt, close to 11 or 12 trillion, rolling over in the bright minds of the Federal Reserve and Department of the Treasury decided to go from 20-year terms down to 90 days and 180-day terms on the Treasury, which sounded good when rates were zero, and that's when they should have refinanced them, but they never did. And so now, when we're looking at the federal funds rate of 4.5% or 5%, right now, with the debt level the way that it is the second largest line item. Third largest, it surpassed government defense spending, the defense budget. So interest rates are really important. So why is that a good spot? So this is kind of a double whammy. The bright spot is the ISM numbers. Okay, this is manufacturing. Manufacturing has been in a recession for 26 months. 26 months, it has been contracting. It's been going the wrong way up until January. January was the first time that we actually expanded or had growth. And then last month, even though it was slight, barely, it wasn't contracting, it was growth. So why is this important? Because it's showing a little bit of strength in the economy. Government spending, we have to, as we reduce government and we reduce spending, that's also going to reduce GDP. Okay, so we have to be careful and balance the growth of the economy as we reduce government spending so we don't throw the economy in a tailspin and in a recession. If the deregulation and Doge and the agenda, if these things don't get passed, including the taxes, until the second half of this year, we could be in trouble. We really could. And even if everything does get passed, I still think we're going to see a correction. This is a good thing. Why is it a good thing? Because it presents opportunities and good buys. So we have cash in a lot of our portfolios, and so it presents opportunities. You know, we're not deploying any new capital because we're waiting. We're still seeing.
They're calling the market perfect right now, is what they're calling it.
Yeah. It really is. This is what you, as an investor, this is what you want, right? Yeah. Unless you're retired, right? And you're saying, oh my gosh, I'm worried. But that's why having a plan is so very important because the ups and downs, right? You know, as long as food, shelter, clothing, basic needs, you're golden, you still can have the ability to enjoy life that you've worked so hard for, okay, that you deserve in retirement, you know, you're fine. Safety, income, and growth. Okay. It's that safety that's important, but the income and growth, right? Making sure that that income portion, that your money's being drawn from things that it doesn't affect whatever happens in the market. Because the growth, that's the stock market, it works. You just need one depleting asset that is unrecoverable in order for that to work. Time, right? You just need time. So I am very, very optimistic still. I think the economy, we're going to see 3% GDP growth. I was having a conversation with a colleague and they're like, yeah, but 3%, that's horrible. I was like, 3% is excellent. If we're reducing government spending, going from 45 and 37% down to even just the average of 25, but if we can get it back down to where it was and below 20%, so we're reducing government spending and we're still at 3% GDP, that means the economy, small businesses are rocking and rolling. And I see the financial sector, when I say financial, I'm talking about local banks, regional banks that hold the majority of commercial real estate. As rates come down, that's going to look really good. Energy, becoming energy independent.
And, you know, I'm going to hit you with this because I know this is like something that we get on all the time. Gold and Bitcoin. Now they're talking about government stepping in and Bitcoin is now being labeled there's two kinds. There's a commodity and then there's some of them that they're labeling a security. So as far as you touching base just on the diversification of your portfolio.
So we'll do cryptos for another day because we could be here for a whole hour on that.
No, right? I'm just saying the diversification.
Right. So let's touch on gold because I know we're nearing the end here. I'm a big believer in gold. You know that.
I know.
You know, I've been doing it since college, right? So I'm relatively recent out of college. I'm a very young man. So it's only been a couple of years. So all of our portfolios having gold, but I am a big believer in physical gold too, and silver, right? I see gold breaking not only 3,000, but you know, I do eventually seeing it get up to 4,000 or 5,000. And if they do actually revalue gold to buy down the debt, which I think would be a smart move, and which I think is why they're looking at auditing Fort Knox, and I can't think of the name of the fort in Colorado, but those two. But, you know, if they revalue, let's just say that at 10,000, that's going to reduce the debt. I'm not saying going back on the gold standard, but, you know, revaluing the gold per ounce, you know, that's going to give us a lot of leverage. And that's really going to help everyone here and get inflation and everything under control. So I think we have some of the brightest minds doing things right now. I don't agree with everything by any stretch of the imagination, and that's okay, because if you agree with everything, there's something wrong there too, I believe. But I think everyone should have a little bit of physical gold in everyone's portfolios. For us, we do have gold, but precious metals, silver, I think it's still really cheap. And gold, it dipped all the way down to 2,700 and change on Friday on the 28th. So yeah, I do like physical gold. So I could go on, I know, and you're like, all right, we're approaching the end, and I get that, but I am very positive on where the country is from an economic standpoint. I think we're headed in the right direction. We just got to make sure that some of these things actually move forward and go through. But, you know, we do have to expect a little bit of pain. It's not going to be easy. And so I'll end with this. I was asked the question, they were talking about every family, every household getting $5,000 and then $5,000 going back to pay down the debt. And you and I talked about it. Shouldn't everything go down and pay down the debt? And then I really got to thinking about it. I'm like, No, people are struggling out there. $5,000 is life-changing for a lot of people, the majority of Americans. That is life-changing, not to over-exaggerate, but putting food on the table, paying their cars and keeping the lights on and power and everything else. I mean, there are people, again, Main Street, it's tough. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I think we're going down the right path, and I feel very, very positive and optimistic, cautiously so, very positive and optimistic for this year.
All right. Well, great information. If you have questions or you want a complimentary 15-minute consultation, you can reach us at info@egsifinancial.com, or you can go to our website, again, egsifinancial.com, or give us a call at 614-526-4118. Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Leanne.
You tested your fitness level, not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance, because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with The Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into 5 simple steps. It's the retirement fitness plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the retirement fitness plan at egsifinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio License Number 102-0619.